Ari, if you'd like to take it away, part three, the last of our three-part series. We're now on animals, the animal kingdom and modernity. And Bakasha, it's all yours.
Okay. So today we're going to be talking about, I guess what's a lesser talked about topic than the last 2 weeks. You know, a lot of people discuss animal experimentation or, well, bullfighting, not so often, wearing a fur. Today's topic is a little less talked about, but I think no less important. And I'm going to do it together with my brother, who is a veterinarian and knows a lot more about the practical aspect over here. And hopefully he will get back into the car and join us. Topic we're going to talk about today is Cirrus behema, which is, which is variously called neutering, castrating, spaying. Really, neutering is the gender-neutral term. Neutering applies to both genders, to males and females. The male-specific term is castrating, and the female term is spaying. People sometimes mix them up. And it in general refers to the removal of a large part of an animal's reproductive organs, and a colloquial term for it is fixing. So we'll just stick with neutering at the beginning. Right now we'll talk about both genders. And as we move on, when we get to the halakhic aspects, as well as the practical aspects, we'll distinguish between the two sexes. Now, why might somebody want to neuter their animals? And this is something that's not new. This is something that for thousands of years, the Gemara talks about it, why people did it. First of all, it's to prevent unwanted or uncontrolled reproduction. Somebody with a pet might want to do it for that reason so that they don't end up with lots of little animals that they didn't want. And municipalities might be interested in doing it if there's a large population of street cats or things like that, which we'll get to later. Another reason to neuter an animal is to prevent other manifestation of sexual behavior, such as intraheterogestion or aggression towards other species. This applies even to sterile mules, but many people with dogs, you know, male dogs might do it because they want to prevent them from being aggressive. If you have a male cow, you might do it because bulls that are neutered are less aggressive than unneutered. And if you have female animals, then the other reason is because to reduce other consequences of sexual behavior that may make animal husbandry more difficult, such as enclosure destruction when attempting to get to nearby females. And the final reason is you may want to neuter an animal not because of the sexual behavior, meaning the reproduction or the aggressiveness or the wanting to mate, but simply because it can increase the growth or weight in an animal. And if you're raising the animal for food, your sole purpose in raising it is that it should gain weight. Now, why is this a topic of interest in terms of halacha and animals and modernity? Well, we'll see that there are, and Donnie will contribute here, there are many newer techniques that have been introduced in recent years in terms of how to neuter animals. And in terms of the halacha, it's because there is a biblical prohibition to neuter an animal. The pasuk says, "Umark v'katud v'natuk v'charus." It's listing different types of animals that are sterile. So those testicles are crushed by hand, crushed by instrument, pulled loose or cut. Ba'artzachem lo ta'asu. You must not do this in your land. So we see that one pasuk, or even just half a pasuk in the Torah, gives us this biblical prohibition of neutering animals. And now we have to turn to the Torah Shebaal Peh, to the Midrashei Halakha, and then the Gemara, and then the Rishonim, to see how they elaborate on this half a pasuk. From this half a pasuk, and we're going to see, does it apply to males and females, Jews, non-Jews? Any kind of question we can come up with regarding this prohibition has been dealt with. So first of all, the Medrash Halacha. The Torah's Kohanim discusses, let's see, it says, Lo takrivu, ein li ela shelo yakrivu. From that verse, I only know that you can't sacrifice the animal. Minayin shlo yasu, how do I know you can't do it at all? Talmud Lomar, the end of the pasuk says, lo ta'asu. Ein li ela tmimim. I know only about animals that don't have any other blemish, because those are the only kinds that I could have brought as a sacrifice. Bali mumam, animals that have a blemish, minayin. How do I know I can't neuter them? Tamaloma lo ta'asu. The pasuk just says you cannot do it. Ein li ela behema. It only talks about animals I could sacrifice. Chayav of, which can't be sacrificed. Minayin. How do I know I can't neuter wild animals and fowl? Tamaloma ba'artzachem. Anything that you raise. Ein li ela ba'arts. It would seem to apply only in the land of Israel. B'chutz la'aretz minayin, how do I know that this prohibition applies out of the land of Israel? Well, Talmud Lomar, lo ta'asu, you cannot do it. B'chol makom shatem, any place that you're to be found. So the Medrash Halacha makes it very clear. The Medrash Halacha says it applies to behema, chaya, and of. It applies to anywhere, not just in the land of Israel, and it applies to animals that already have some sort of blemish. The Chinuch, the way he always does, explains the rationale behind this mitzvah. He tries to give us a reason for the mitzvah. And he says, Mishor she'a mitzvah, lefi shashem baruchu bara alama b'tachlis ha-shlemut. God created a complete world. What does he mean, complete? Lo chaser v'lo yotir bo dovra mikol ha-roi liot bo l'shlemuto. God put every kind of species that should be in the world. They're not missing any, and there are no extra. And that's the key, there are no extra. And God blessed the animals that they should reproduce, that they should stay on this on the planet, that species. And male humans were commanded on this as well. If they don't reproduce, he says if a species doesn't reproduce, then they'll become extinct because death comes to all creatures. And if they don't reproduce, that species will go extinct. Va'alkein, hamafsid kliyazera, somebody who neuters an animal, mara benafsho, he's showing with his actions, kimishu cuts, like if he's disgusted, b'masa haborei, with the actions of the creator, v'rotza bashchatat olamo atov, and he doesn't want to keep the world going the way God created it. Okay. Okay, so very interesting discussion. This, I don't know, Jay maybe knows of some philosophy around this. There's a Gemara in Chagiga that talks about four who entered Paradise. The famous story with the four people who entered Paradise, and one of them came out okay, and one of them went crazy, and one of them became a kofar, Elohim ben Azay ben Zoma, Achav Rabbi Akiva. And at the end of this already strange, enigmatic story, it says Rabbi Akiva Yotze B'Sholem. Rabbi Akiva was the only one who came out whole and intact. Shalu et Ben Zoma. They asked Ben Zoma, Mahu l'susei kalba. Are you allowed to neuter a dog? Omalehem. And he answered, as we saw before in the Medrash Halacha, Uba'artzachem lo ta'asu, kol sheba'artzachem lo ta'asu, that you're not allowed to do it to any animal in your land. And Rashi explains, what's the question here? Why are they even asking about a dog? And he says, "Hol v'sirus k'siv etzabali mumei korban." The whole prohibition is found in the context of sacrifices. The kelev, a dog, not only are you not allowed to bring a dog as a sacrifice, afilu chilufav asalim esbeach, even from the pasuk of esnan zona umachir kelev, even the money you get from selling a dog can't be used to bring a sacrifice. So therefore, you might think that you're not allowed to neuter it, and therefore he answered, you're allowed. Now, why is that the question that they asked Ben Zoma? What's the significance behind it? I have no idea, but it's a very strange thing that they ask after these four come out of Paradise. Okay, so we saw for a Jew, it applies to Behema, Chaya, and Of. To a Jew, it applies anywhere in the world. The question is, does it apply to Bnei Noach, to non-Jews? Do they have a prohibition of neutering? And we're used to listing Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, seven commandments that all human beings have to follow, and usually Sirus doesn't appear on that list. Well, the Gemara in Sanhedrin actually wasn't quite sure of what the seven were, and in developing it, it said, it quotes Rab Chitka, Rab Chitka Omer, Af ala Sirus. Non-Jews are prohibited from Sirus. The Tana Devei Menashe, Sheva Mitzvahs Estaba B'nei Noach, is a Breiser from the house of Menashe, and he says, what are the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach? Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, the but usually the big three, and are always listed as shemitzvahs. B'nai Noach, Gezel, Eva Menachai, those two are also always listed in the seven. And he then adds Sirus and Kilayim. And as you know, Sirus, the Chsiv, Shortzub Aretz Rabu Bo, that's the Pasuk in Bereishis, talking to all humanity. And therefore, this Braisa says, it doesn't have two of the usual that we have. We usually have, instead of Sirus and Kilayim, we usually have the prohibition of, the assay of having din, and there's one lav that I'm missing. There's one of the lav that he took out. But he says that Sirus and Kalayim are among the Shemitzvahs B'nai Noach. And more than that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Baba Metzia says, Amrav Papa B'nai Ma'arava, meaning in the land of Israel, Savila Karab Chitka, they paskin like Rab Chitka. They hold that these are the Shemitzvahs B'nai Noach. Domra B'nai Noach Mitzvah Ma'ala Sirus. So it's not only that there was this sole opinion, which was then recorded just for posterity, but it's more than that. The Gemara in Baba Metzia tells us that the Jews in the land of Israel actually held like that, that Sirus was prohibited even from B'nai Noach. And this is going to be very significant when we get later to practically what do people do. People with pets often try to come up with workarounds to have some way that they could neuter their pet. And one of those common workarounds relies on non-Jews. And here, it's not only am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something that I'm now not allowed to do. In this case, Rab Chitka is saying that the non-Jew himself is prohibited in this. That's the Gemara. When you go to the Rishonim, most of the opinions say that there is no prohibition. The Rambam, the Rosh, the Rashba, the Beis Yosef, all do not paskin like this opinion. They all say there's no prohibition whatsoever for a non-Jew. There are a few poskim who say indeed there is a prohibition from the Torah. Among them are some significant ones like the Shilta, which is one of the earliest list of halachos that we have, the Smag and the Ravid. Because of this significant debate, the Beit Shmuel, who's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, Ebenezer, says, V'yesh lachush. We should take this into consideration, into account, when the question comes up. And the Aruch HaShulchan, in summarizing this topic, says, K'shem Shabbos, Amir La'ovet Kachavim Shvus, K'mo Kein B'chol Yisroam. He says, just like we know that there's a rabbinic prohibition to ask a non-Jew to do a prohibition or to do something that you're not allowed to do, he says, in all prohibitions of the Torah, I cannot ask a non-Jew to do something that I'm not allowed to do. I can't just outright ask a non-Jew to neuter my animal because of Amir La'akum. He hasn't gotten yet to the problem of that maybe it's an Isser on the guy as well. And then he's a Lidat Rova Poskim Dibnei Noach, Enu Mitzvah Ma'ala Sirus, Mutter Kamoshim Mutter Limka Lo Behem Ashochlenu Shlo B'Shchit. Meaning, sorry, I skipped the line. Avol Limka Behem Tol Lekuti Shesher Lidat Rova Poskim, that would be allowed. Meaning, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, according to most opinions, I could sell my animal to the non-Jew, a real sale, knowing that he is going to neuter the animal. Let's say I raise pups. I raise them only till a young age, till a few weeks old, and then I sell them to other people. I could sell one to a non-Jew, knowing that he is going to neuter that animal, because most opinions say that B'nai Noach aren't commanded against this. Just like I could sell a non-Jew a cow, knowing that he's going to kill it some other way and eat it without shchita. And then he gets to the however. Mihu yesh poskim desfile de benoach mitzuva gam ken lasirus. There are those who say that a non-Jew is prohibited on sirus. Rab Chitka, who would know this Rosh HaTeva, so let's just look to the Gemara. And ledina ha'ikr kedas rova poskim v'chein edas ha'rambam mikol makom yesh shechashu ledeazu. He says, indeed, the majority of poskim say a non-Jew is not prohibited, but we should still take it into account when we're poskim. And then what's fascinating, those of you in America know that there's a movement of B'nai Noach. You have these B'nai Noach who are actually forming congregations in different places. Jay, are you talking? Please, you're muted. There are these groups of B'nai Noach who are forming congregations in different places, and they've been asking shaylas. There are rabbis who are acting as their poskim. And in Holland, Rav Efres got a question. He says, Nishalti al yedei ben Noach, Shomer Shomer hazayin mitzvah ben Noach, imuto litein behemto lerofe behemos. So this non-Jew owns an animal, and he wants to know if he could give it to a non-Jewish vet to have him neuter it. And he, rather than Paskin, he invited two other people. He asked for their opinions. Rav Meir Levin, Yisro Meir Levinger, said, "Bisfarot elu efshalim so snif lakil." He says, "You know what? I think you could find a reason to permit it. That he said you could let the non-Jew give to another to give to a vet to do it." However, then he quotes another rabbi from Holland who says, "Lechein da'ati." After he brings his rationale, "Sheyesh lifsok lenachri hanal luchumra." You should tell, he says, this Ben Noach, that it's prohibited for him to neuter an animal. But it's fascinating when they get shilas from non-Jews who want to really observe the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and they're asking for a psak from a rabbi. Okay, how does the Rambam rule in all of these issues? So the Rambam says, Osur lahafsid evarizera ben bodem ben behema chayev of. He says, you're not allowed to damage the reproductive organs in a human or in an animal. We're not going to discuss humans today at all. That also raises a lot of very important halacha questions. Questions that come up, for example, with various kinds of surgery, prostate surgery, other surgeries, where you have to take into account if it's going to damage the reproductive organs. We're going to stay away from humans today. The Rambam says it's prohibited from the Torah to damage the reproductive organs, behemachayv of, echet tmeya vechet tahorim, doesn't matter if it's a kosher animal or not a kosher animal, ben be'erit Yisrael, ben b'chutzlarts, in Israel, on chutzlarts, afa bishneva b'artzachem, he knows that the verse says, in your land, to lo tasu mipi ha'shmur, l'manu shedover denoig b'chol mokom, we have a tradition, it applies anywhere. And then we're going to skip here, he says, v'chol ha'masaris loket min ha'torah. The punishment for this violating this prohibition would have been malchus, would have been 39 lashes, and it's the act of doing it, he says, that's prohibited. Meaning, if the animal is already sterile, if somebody already neutered the animal and he's sterile, but you go ahead and damage another one of the reproductive organs, that violates the prohibition. And the Rambam explains, Kate said, "Harei shu'echad v'koriz." What does it mean? Sorry, misaris achar misaris. One of them cuts one organ, another one comes cuts another organ, etc. This the alpha pishu lo soris achon elamisoris. The last one only did an act to an animal that's already sterile. Ben ba'adam ben behema chayvov, and this applies to every animal. And this is just it seems how they do it to cows. We'll move on from that picture. But as somebody said 2 weeks ago, if the slaughterhouses had glass, many more people would be vegetarians. I think if some of the procedures for spaying and neutering animals were seen by the pet owners, they would be more hesitant to do it to their pets. Okay, now comes the really very important question. Till now, we haven't distinguished between males and females. Is there a difference in halacha regarding this halacha? The Tosefta. Again, it's a Tanaitic source, just like we saw before in the Midrash, the Halachic Medrash. A Masaris as Adam, Vesa Behema, Vesa Chaya, Vetofot, Ben Gedolim, Ben Ketanim, Ben Scharim, Ben Nekevot, Areza Chayev. According to the Stam opinion of the Tosefta, the Tanaitic source, it's a biblical prohibition for males to do it to males and to females. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He Omer Misaris Zecharim Chayev, Misaris Nekevus Potter. He says that the biblical, the prohibition for which one would get malchus is only if it's a male. A female, a person is Potter. Now we'll see soon. Does it mean Potter and you may do it, or Potter but it's still prohibited? And the Medrash Halacha says Minayin Shenekevus Besiros Tamaloma Ki Mashkutam Behem Mumbam. So again, the Stam Tana says it's prohibited for females. And again, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Behem, Ein Nekevet Pesuros, he says there's no prohibition, or it's not a, you don't get malchus for doing it to females. Rambam says, Ben Ba'adam, Ben B'Sharminim, Pater. And the Rambam paskins, like Rabbi Yehuda, not like the Tanakhama, that a person is potter for a female. But what does that mean? Well, the Magen Mishnah explains the Rambam. He says, "Betorat konim, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein anakevet busiris, v'chen muva perek shimon ashortzim, uperish Rabbeinu," meaning the Rambam, "chiyuvahu deleka." There's no punishment. Avalisura, a prohibition, ikar, there's certainly a prohibition. Midalotani mutter, lesaris anakevus, ulezekos Rabbeinu potter. So the Magen Mishnah understands the Rambam as saying that it's prohibited, but that there's no punishment. That will be very significant. What did the Shulchan Aruch say? Shulchan Aruch more or less quotes the Rambam at the beginning. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam. However, when he gets to the part about females, he quotes the Rambam, but inserts the Magen Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam. Meaning the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Rambam, but he understands the Rambam that it's still prohibited to do to a female, just there's no punishment. And the Aruch HaShulchan, again, we're getting now to the early 20th century, says, "V'chein b'behema chayev v'of, ben b'zarcho, ben b'nekevot, asur l'afzid evre zarom, u'mikol makum malkes eno chayev rak al'skorim v'lon enekevos." So just like the Shulchan Aruch, there is a prohibition, but there's no punishment by an akeva. Avalisur for the prohibition, shavanim, they're equal. There's a biblical prohibition for male and female. V'yesh shemash me'midivrayim, but in akevas eni yisrak v'darabonim. He says there are those who say that by females it's only a rabbinic prohibition. V'chein nir miloshin Rambam, and he thinks that's what the Rambam says as well. And he says, Tosfos, well, if you want to paskin like Tosfos, he says he thinks Tosfos holds that it's a biblical prohibition with Malkus. And to bring it to the 21st century, the Nishmas of Rome, who was talking mostly about humans, but he brings in animals, he says, Ladina, Kevin del Chol Hani Rabsu, Yesh Isser Sears Gamben, a cave of Behema, Omer der Isser, Omer der Abonin, Vivad Das Atazra Prisha. He says, everybody seems to agree it's prohibited to be Masaris in the Keva, except for the Taz and the Prisha. Kosher lahat esirus balechayim in the Keva is gam letzoch nima refuah. His question, Nishmas Avram, is a fascinating work. It goes through the entire Shulchan Aruch, bringing halachas that are relevant to medical questions. And the question he had over here in Eben Ezra Simon Hay, which deals with spaying, which deals with neutering, is can you neuter female animals to teach medical students whatever it is they wanted to teach? And what he says is that you might think it has a very useful purpose here. You're doing it in order to teach future doctors or to do research and to advance the medical course. And yet he says you can't even do it on a female because most of the poskim hold that neutering a female is also a prohibition. And he says that's what Leif Aryeh says, V'chein omeli agon of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So the Shlomo Zalman also paskind that you can't neuter females for the medical education or for medical research. Okay, everything till now was about actually damaging the reproductive organs. How about doing it in an indirect manner, meaning groma? Can you do it what does that mean indirectly? Well, for example, the Shulchan Aruch says, Zocher, by males, Hamashket kos shel ikrin la'adam or l'shar bar lechayim kedei l'sarso. If you give him some sort of medicine, some sort of drink that he drinks that causes him to become sterile by a male, he says harei ze asur. It is prohibited to do that for a male, but nonetheless, elokanolov, you don't get malchus. That's not the main prohibition. That's not a prohibition for which you have malchus. Harei. Now he gives an example of other kinds of groma, other kinds of indirect methods. And they're very creative, you'll see. Horesha kofes adam v'shosta bo kelev. You tie a person down, you stick a dog on him, and then the dog does your dirty work. He takes off the reproductive organs of the person. O shachayas, a different animal. Ad shasur kushuch. O shoshiv b'mayim o b'shelik. Or you put an animal or person in snow when you tie down. Ad shivatu v'enu evri tashmish. Till he loses his reproductive ability, eino loka, there's no punishment of lashes, ad shiasaris biyadu. However, these aren't nice things, very like osamakas mardis. The rabbi should nonetheless beat him. He doesn't get punishment from the Torah for this violation, but nonetheless, he didn't do good. And the Gro over here says, when you say Arei Shekofas Adam, Kenal Shekol She'enu Nogeya Be'evrei Hazera Einu Loka. The Gro explains, as long as you haven't actually damaged the reproductive organs themselves, there is no malchus. How about groma by a female? So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Isha muteret lishtot ikrin kedelis arsa achlo telid lechatchila." He says a woman is allowed to take some sort of a pill or drink which will cause her to become sterile. And why? Well, the Beis Shmuel says, "Mashma filu b'lot sar klam," meaning even if there's no overriding reason, you might have thought, well, it's a woman who, when she gets pregnant, has extreme suffering, or when she delivers, she has lots of pain, or it's danger. In that case, she's allowed to indirectly cause herself to become sterile. The Beit Shmuel says, no, it is implied from the Shulchan Aruch's language that even without any of that, she's allowed to sterilize herself. And the Chelkat Mechokik says, V'gam doch lomad di'isha gam ken asur lishtos, m'lomneit tsar leid kamosh shuchilik b'vach. He says it's a little, he doesn't fully understand it, but it seems that that's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. Okay, so if there's no effect on the reproductive organs, there are other kinds of ways of sterilizing as well. Strange, the Gemara in Shabbos, whoever's learning Daf Yomi, we had just this a few weeks ago, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Harotzi Sheyasaris Tarnagol. If you want that your rooster should become sterile, what do? The Gemara says, Yitol Karbaloso, take off its comb. And it automatically becomes sterile. It just happens on its own. How? Well, Rashi tells us, you're allowed to do this. And he explains why. Vam Rav Ashi, the Gemara says, we'll just read the Hebrew translation. When he has his comb, he's very haughty. And therefore, he's willing to approach the female. When you take off the comb, he's very sad. And he doesn't approach the female. Nothing happened to his reproductive organs. Rashi explains, you didn't do the prohibition of Sirus. And he again quotes the Gemara. Now the Shulchan Aruch says, therefore he brings out, in other words, this is even more than indirect. The Shulchan Aruch had said, regarding a male, indirectly, you're not allowed to do it, but you don't get lashes. The Rama says that regarding taking off the comb of the chicken, that's allowed. Because afagav the mistaris alidezeh v'chol kiyotze bezeh, del ovid klum be'evre hazera. Meaning, because nothing happens to the evre hazera. Meaning, it sounds like, and we'll get to this soon when we get to the drugs that Dani is going to talk about, it sounds like they understood there are three different possibilities. One is you could do something to the reproductive organs. Biblical prohibition, and by a male, there's malchus. You could do something that causes actual sterility, which somehow they didn't understand the hormones, but it somehow affected the reproduction. And then you could do something that doesn't even affect the reproductive ability. It simply makes the animals not interested. And that is permitted even the chalchila. And the Beit Shmuel explains that Tom, the ain masaris also rakal, he's just very sad, the chicken, and he doesn't do anything. And very similarly, says mutalikshot in a cave shaloyala alayam's harm. You could tie up the back of the female so that the males can't climb on them. Okay. And the Gro again explains. The Gro just explains that you didn't really do serious, you just prevented them from climbing on each other. And another very similar example, the Gemara in Bava Basra talks about that how you could be Masaris bees. The Gemara says, how could you prevent bees from reproducing? And why do you want to do that? Because I want them to stay busy making honey. I don't want them to be busy with the boys and the girls. So what do? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Bechardo, you give them honey. And how does that work? He says, Lo Bechardo Masaris, and it doesn't really sterilize them. Ele mitoch shepihen chad, because now their mouth is sharp. Rashi says mar, it's bitter, because you gave them the mustard. I said, honey, sorry, you give them mustard, and then they get bitter. Kozeret v'ochelet et dufshan, they go out and they want to keep eating. Mitoch shibutan betelod mipirivirivya, because they're bosar dvash. They make a lot of honey that way. They go out and they eat more, they come back and they make honey. So that's exactly like taking the comb off of chicken. They just are not interested in reproducing. And that's how the Gemara, Rabbeinu Gershon explains it. Also, the Eino Rashai L'Sos and L'Gamri, you can't actually sterilize them. Because their mouth is strong, it's bitter from the mustard, they go out, they go eat more in order to sweeten their mouth. And then they're busy making honey and they don't get involved with reproducing. And a similar thing in Shabbos, we had a few months ago, you could tie up underneath a male, and the same thing by females, you could cover up their reproductive organs so that they can't reproduce, because there also, you're not sterilizing them in any way. Okay, and one more example of that, that the Dark Emosha, the Emor brings, where you could, again, you could put something that blocks the female so the male can't come on her, and you haven't sterilized, you've just prevented them from reproducing. And as Prochinach now, in summarizing the halachas, he says, Mash amuzar gona levracha shafil omar legoy lesaris behema shal Yisrael osar, I cannot ask a non-Jew to do it for me. Aval im locha hagoy mi'atzma, I'm a farmer, and I have a neighbor who's a farmer, a non-Jewish neighbor. The Jew knows that I want my animals to be neutered. If the non-Jew comes, takes my cow, neuters it, and then gives it back, mutal lekacha mi'ad v'locha, v'im harim Yisrael. But if the Jew did it as a trick, he sort of shows what he wants. You know, he hints to the non-Jewish neighbor, I wish my animals were sterile like your animals, etc. Like the lowly tricksters do, when the goy does it for you and gives it back, you get punished and you have to sell that animal. You can't keep it. Now you could sell it to your adult son, but you can't keep it. Okay. Now the Shulchan Aruch on this says, Osur lo, and this is where really, this is one of the things that people, or a step towards the heterum that people use today. And he says, Osur lo malovet kachom l'saris behem shalom. I can't tell a non-Jew to do it. Okay, this is what we just read. And the Ramah says, I could sell it to him cheap, even though he's going to sterilize it. The Ovid Kacham Adaita Denavshe Kovid, he's doing it for himself. And more than that, he says, I could sell it to him knowing he's going to do it. But so here is the first mention of what I call a double goy. Is allowed. Double goy question. Okay, now. We should deal with, let's see. Well, excellent question. Rabbi here in Israel, in his book of Tshuva,
okay, Dr. Ayer, yeah, I was wondering the same thing. It was quite choppy, and I didn't know if it was just my computer or everybody else, but it appears like it's everybody else, which Dr. Ari means it's your computer. So I don't know, the last, I'd say, minute and a half, we really couldn't hear you.
Okay, so let me go back up for a second. This was very important. That's
better. Maybe you're too close to your computer, mic, but okay, yeah, now okay. What you said
did
was
you fine. Did you hear the double goya?
I heard you say something about the double goyim, but okay. Not maybe start from there again.
Okay, the Ramah is very important about the double goy. The Ramah says, what's a double goy? If a non-Jew takes my animal and he then gives it to another non-Jew, to do the dirty, to do the neutering. The Ramah seems to permit that. And that's going to be very important. In America, a lot of people talk about that. I have a pet. I want to castrate it. I want to neuter it. Can I give it to a non-Jew to then bring to his non-Jewish veterinarian to do that, to do the neutering? So that's an issue that comes up a lot. So the first thing that we're going to get to is, even before the double goy, questions that come up nowadays. Rav Avin, I just said one other thing when you lost me over there. There was a lot of, I saw on the chat, a lot of people started asking about birth control pills, chemical castration, etc. We're getting, that's where we're heading right now. Okay, Rav Aviner was asked about a female dog, if you're allowed to neuter it. And Rav Aviner had said, if you use anesthesia, you're allowed to do it. And he said, there's no pain. He says, the Bach, and maybe he's only one of only two who permits by a female, he says, you're allowed for medical reason. And Rav Aviner obviously felt there's medical need here. The Taz says the prohibition is only because of Tsar Bali Chaim. It's not clear where that comes from. You've all seen all of the sources, and the Tanaitic sources all seem to prohibit a female as well. And he says, this is for a medical need. You're doing the neutering of the female dog for medical need. And therefore he concludes, Hareshi Yeshkan Sveik Sveika. He introduces this halacha concept of a double doubt. Ben Issadur Abonin, he decided that a female is only an Issadur Abonin, even though, as you all saw, that's not clear. It prevents repeated pain for this animal. He says that if you're lenient, you have on what to rely. Rabbi Eliezer Shinkolovsky, who happens to be the rabbi of my shul here in Beit Shemesh, wrote a response to Rav Aviner in the Journal of Ma'ayan. And he was quite upset with Rav Aviner's playing around with halakha concepts. He said, first of all, of course there's pain here. And he said, the Gro and others say that it's a biblical operation, not rabbinic. And he says, when do you take a machloket and turn it into a concept of fake sveika? And more, and I will skip all the detail here, but I want to get to the other stuff as well. He says that, what was Rav Aviner talking about when he said that you're preventing repeated pain? He says that by doing the surgery, it prevents the animal from having repeated pain. Donnie, are you here? Uh-oh. Because here he said like this. He said, Rov Hamagadlin Balechayim Bebeta. Most people who raise pets in their house, Osam Zot Lahanasam, they're raising the animal because they want it. It's the rare person who's doing it as a seeing eye dog or as a therapy animal. Most people do it because they want to have a pet. You can't call that desire a medical need. That's going to permit things that are prohibited. He says, you can't. Well, hold on. Did we skip here? I might have skipped. Sorry, we have to read. What did he mean, Tokrafi? He says, the question is that there are only two possibilities in the world. Ol Sarais Brituach, to do a surgical sterilization. Ol Tate Zrikat Kufatit Machivamod, to give monthly painful injections. He said those are the only two injections, two options. And he was asking Rav Aviner, what's the better of the two? And that's why Rav Aviner said, do the surgical neutering rather than the monthly injections. And what Rav Shikolovsky says is, Misha Kasha love the tapel b'malechayim al pi'alecha, if you can't keep a pet and follow alecha, Rashan l'mater al tanukaseh, you could give up this pl- and not avoid a pet. Here also, he said,
all right, we don't hear you. Last 15 seconds. Dr. Okay. Harvey? About 15 seconds, that's all. He said, you can give up on your pet. Rav Aviner said, give up on your pet. That's where you
were. Rav Shikolovsky. Rav Shikolovsky. And don't pet. Before. We're going again. That doesn't justify violence. Okay, now this question about what to do with pets or strays. Strays are a big question that keep coming up. So this was an article that appeared in Arut Sheva a few years ago in the Hebrew, and it was very interesting. They say, Mutar l'saris chatulim v'klavim meshototim, stray cats and dogs, Rav Ephraim Zalmanovich. He's the Rav of Maskeret Batya. He said, Matir la'akor l'saris kalbei bar v'chatul bar, stray cats and dogs you could neuter. Why? He says, chatul, however he says, and he says, it doesn't matter, im b'nituach, im b'sirisei hormonali. You could do it by surgery. You could do it by giving them hormones. However, chatulei bayit, beklavei bayit, pet cats and dogs, ein lisaris, ela mechovata balim, l'shmar lehem. You can't neuter pet cats and dogs. The owner has to look after them. And here's where he really goes out on a limb. What's the reason? Mecha veterinarium kovim chad mashmit shemniat ikor. He says the vets have decided categorically that if you don't do this, then it's not good for the cats and for the dogs. It's a danger to them and to the people. And more than that, he says, mechkarim, research, gilush, leklavot, kalbot, shlokru, female dogs that are not neutered, they develop cancer and they get infections in their uterus. It's by the males. Prevents prostate disease. Donnie, are you here? Oh, he seems to have lost him. Okay. Well, after this article came out, he gives no explanation for the difference between pets and wild animals. And the halacha doesn't distinguish. And his science is seriously flawed, so much so that after a veterinarian who is supposed to be here with us, Danny, are you here? Nope. After a veterinarian discussed with him the facts, he changed his mind. He said he was not aware of those facts, and he changed his mind. The Shevet Alevi, a well-known posek, said, also was dealing with the question, say, quote, Gurja, the Shamba London, Yeshno Balabais, Shemachzikim Chatulot, the Kevot Negrachbrim. Here, they're keeping the pet for a very productive reason. He's keeping the pet, the cats, in order to eat mice. Most Lerofe Goy Kedelus are some, and he gives them to a non Jewish. It could be Donnie is muted, Jay. Can you check? He's giving the. He's giving the these cats to a non-Jewish vet in order to neuter them. And the person who's writing the question is bothered by this. He says maybe he shouldn't be doing this. And the Shevet Alevi says, let's get to the end. Shevet Alevi says, "Lefize ahanilan kolanal al kolponim ein tzorchim chod b'misha osakein l'saris and akevet shalachatulim al yidei goy." So Shevet Alevi says that if you're doing it with a non-Jewish veterinarian, he thinks that you have what to rely on. Okay, Dani, are you there now?
I'm trying to unmute him, and I don't know. Okay, now it should be unmuted.
Dani?
No. I don't know why it's not working.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you. Okay. So can we go back a second? Were you listening? We were talking about the conversation you had. Yes.
We're talking about Rabbi Zalmanovich.
Okay.
And it's interesting that Rabbi Zalmanovich and Rabbi Aviner were fed sort of biased information by the people that wanted to get a heter, meaning that it is true that female dogs that are neutered before they reach puberty, it helps that it prevents almost completely from getting mammary cancer, which is not an unusual cancer for non-spayed older female dogs to get. However, it turns out that 30 years ago, veterinarians used to say that it's healthy to spay and neuter your pet. So when you get a pet, you vaccinate him when he's a puppy, and at 6 months you bring him in and get him spayed or neutered because it's good for his health. But in the last two decades, there have been many, many studies that have shown that although it prevents mammary cancer, there are many, many other adverse effects to the animal by having it spayed and neutered at a young age. So it turns out that it's good business for veterinarians because we make a lot of money because things like orthopedic disease. Should I continue about this a little bit to give that? Yes?
Just things what like, diseases? If you neuter an animal, what diseases will he get?
So for example, female dogs, the most common orthopedic injury they get is a torn cruciate ligament. People know about it because people also get it. And it's three times as common in a spayed larger female dog than it would be in a non-spayed dog. Or between 10 and 20% of all female dogs that are spayed at a young age, like is recommended, will develop urinary incontinence sometime in their life as a result of it. And it's something that simply doesn't happen in non-spayed female dogs. And there's a whole slew of cancers that are much more common. For example, osteosarcoma in certain breeds could be as much as 6 to 8 times more common if a dog is spayed when she is prepubescent. I mean, and there's a list of there must be more than 50 papers describing adverse effects of neutering at a young age. And so today, many veterinarians will say to a person when it comes time to spay the pet, I think we should have a conversation before you do it. It makes things a lot more convenient. Your dog doesn't come into heat. You don't have to make sure she doesn't get pregnant. But you're putting yourself at increased risk for a whole slew of other diseases.
Okay. So the question then that was asked, Im lo nuchal lasarit et hakalba shelanu, if we can't neuter our female dog, nifterech lizrok et hagorim shetamlit ba'ez sadeh, we're going to have to take the babies and just get rid of them. B'shom erestam yamutir, and they're going to die. And what the Pnine Halacha answered, Rav Malaman answered, is la halacha adif laharog bal chayim meshar l'sharso. He doesn't say you should leave it in a field to die of hunger, but he said from a halachic perspective, it's preferable to mercy kill the animal rather than to neuter it. Li'isur sirus in shum heter. Li'ilu hargam k'sheish b'gach tzorach mutar. When there's a need, you're allowed to kill an animal if you do it properly. And what's fascinating is a lot of the animal rights people like to use anthropomorphisms. And yet when it comes to this, most of them don't. And if you ask them, would you prefer if they would neuter you at a young age and live your life as a neuter, most of them would probably say no. And what's interesting is there was a zoo in Europe that did take that that attitude. And they said that their giraffes, well, I want them to live full, wholesome lives. They're doing this anthropomorphically. And therefore, they said that they want to let those giraffes reproduce and have the experience of being a parent. But the problem is, then they were having too many giraffes. So I don't know if you remember, but 2-3 years ago on the news, they had this giraffe killing in the zoo. And they explained exactly like the Pnine Halacha says, that the adult giraffes, we want them to have a full life. And that involves having these babies. And it's better that we should kill the babies, but let the adults have this full life. And that's what he says over here. It's better to kill them in a humane manner. Ulitim afa diflargam kegon kasher bal chaim cholev zofel. Mercy killing. Mitzana mitzvah limno mi bal chaim tsar o diflargam. So he says that if you have a choice of killing the animal or neutering it, he says, and he doesn't say this, but it could be that if you would ask the animal, he might prefer it as well. He might say, I don't want to live my whole life neutered. That's not a full life. But in any event, the Pnine Halacha states what really is pretty straightforward halachically, that it's halachically preferable to mercy kill the animal than to neuter them. Now, I saw that there were a whole bunch of chats. I just want to say, I want to comment on one or two of them. Somebody mentioned about that pets have been shown to be good for shut-ins or for certain children. 100%. That's why I said most people who have pets are not doing it for medical needs. There are people who have single-eyed dogs. There are people who have what are called therapy dogs. You have for kids who have difficulty with autism, and they would have pets. There are certainly pets that serve a medicinal purpose. But I would say the overwhelming majority of pet owners aren't doing it for medical reason, but doing it because they want to have a pet. Okay, so the big question is, well, there are two big questions. One is for the pet owner who wants to neuter his animal. There's then the question of farmers And then the last question is about strays. And the question that was asked to Rav Melamed, the strays, the cats that are all over the streets of Jerusalem, is there a solution? And he says, a pitaron atobiotherapy alecha ulishtamesh begululot l'miniat tereon. I saw somebody wrote in the chat, what about birth control pills? Rav Melamed says, let's give all the stray cats birth control pills. Just like women take. In the Western world, the overwhelming majority of women are on birth control pills. I know that at Bar Ilan University, where I teach, when people want to do studies that are affected in any way by the female cycle, it's very difficult to find subjects because they're all on birth control pills. It says, L'krat anote yichum, when they approach heat, machnisim otol l'toch ochel she'ahen avot, you put into the food that the cats like, v'yidei kach mona manerion. So that's what he says is the best solution, birth control pills. Amnam chelik mevetinim lo avim et hashimush b'lolot ha'ilu. He says, some vets don't like using these pills, neshe l'datam hein alulot l'grom l'kevot l'machlat sartan, because these pills will cause cancer. Ella, now Rav Melamed takes a leap. He says, "Sheim rov anashim shtamshot b'glulot b'miriat tarion." He says, all the women of the world are on these birth control pills, and they're now worried about this danger. Certainly, he could use it for animals. Zugam derech l'modedut im ribachat limbarim. All the animals in the street, just lefazer b'chovot kol kamachad d'shem, every few months, put out these birth control pills in the street. The problem is that Malamed science was a little bit off. Most women use what's called a mini pill, which is a low dose of estrogen and progesterone. Cats take something else. Donnie, tell us about it.
They take magestral acetate. Magestral acetate is like a high dose progesterone. I think some of the very early birth control pills in women were like that, but no one would do that to a woman today because it's unhealthy.
And indeed, when they take these high dose, they can lead to increased mammary cancers or purely uterine infection. Meaning, when Rav Melamed tried to do a kal v'chomer over here, it didn't quite work. He said, kal v'chomer, all these women take it. Certainly, we can let animals take it, and there's no danger. Unfortunately, the kal v'chomer doesn't work because we're talking about two different types of pills. He then says, yesh ot shtei drachim efshariyot shemevchinat hilchatit pachot mumlatzot v'gam bitoyen yekar yoter. He says you have two other things. How could you deal with an animal that you want to neuter? Have some sort of complicated surgery by a Jew. So he says there's a complex surgery that would be allowed. Donnie?
Don't know.
Okay. He says, tying the tubes.
Right.
Wow, we're running out of time. The double goy, which you mentioned in the Ramah, double goy is not direct emul akum. There's no lifne iver, because even if a non-Jew is prohibited, I'm not asking a non-Jew to do it. The other non-Jew is asking him, and he doesn't have a prohibition of lifne iver. However, many halachic authorities oppose using this for convenience sake. At least most of the halachic authorities in America. Rabbi Chaim Jachter has an article about halacha and onin pets. And he quotes Rabbis Blech, Schechter, Feinstein, and Tendler, all as being against using the double goy. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, though, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was dealing with a different reality. He wasn't dealing with pets, he was dealing with farm animals in Europe. And the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, Osalom Aleinu Yudi Lasaris Behem Shalonu, I can't directly ask the non Jew to neuter. The Yeshomim Dafila Mochalan Yudi Oli Nolo, he can't do. However, he says, the Imkain, Hayesro Amihu, he says, what can you do? So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch seems to think that if I sell it to the first non-Jew, who then asks the second non-Jew, there's no prohibition of double goy. Now, this was a real issue in Europe. We're not talking about cats and dogs as pets, like Rabbi Shinkolovsky said, that you're doing it for your own need. We're talking about people who owned horses because they needed for transportation. We're talking about people who had farms which they needed to raise the animals for their parnasa. And therefore, we find many, many tshuvas in the 18th and 19th century coming out of Eastern Europe about double goy. Rav Shlomo Kluger, was asked about it. And he said, Yoda Pila and Paula Harich for Lo Yachmeb is a Yotimidai, Umutal call the Nochri, Lo Marley Nochri Acher. He says, I could sell it to one non-Jew who's then going to ask another non-Jew. So if Shlomo Kluger again matters that form of a double goy. The Chassam Sofer talks about it. He says, your letter arrived, and you're talking about Yisraelim Sochri Behemus. We're talking about Jewish cattle merchants who also had the same issue. There's a real Nochim Vacher Shisersha Nochri. They pour the same thing. They give it to, they sell it to one non-Jew who has another non-Jew neuter it. And they're also, after a long discussion, is Amdam Kvar Hichli, Pepashtis, Chuvas Pnei Yoshua, and now the Ein Tzorach Lachush Ledat Yechidoi, the Aposki, Mamish Kulam, Aposki, the Loka of Chitka, the Ein Ben Noach Metzuva, and therefore you're allowed to do it. The Maharam Shik talks about it, and the Maharam Shik also permits it. Meaning, you have here, and the Rashban, who is the nephew of the Maharam Shik. He says, Bebehema Shemochen, Mi'ato Hayo Lon Lassolim Ko Behema, he said, you should do that. The Afa Gav, the Iko Me'ator, Becholze, He says you could use trickery in a rabbinic prohibition, and therefore we all look the other way, he says, of the rabbis, and that this is allowed. Okay. Machon Torah V'Arad deals also with the double goy question, but I just want to get to the very end, the Sholem Meshi of Reb Natanson. Also, as you see, 18th and 19th century, nobody's talking about pets. They're talking about businesses, and the Jews were doing double goy, and they all seem to allow it. In the early years of the State of Israel, the question came up, what to do on farms here? Hashela b'keshel l'sfiru sh'osu mayom b'behemot, gasol v'dakot, b'shita chadosha, hashon l'gami v'ashoye nor kodim. He says in the early 1960s, there was a new method of neutering. No pogei b'evra, I mean, that doesn't touch the reproductive organs. He says, and then he describes what they do, and Rav Unterman, the chief rabbi, discusses what they should do on the farms in the land of Israel. How about groma by an non-Jew? And we just get to the last thing. Shevet Levi talks about it. What I just wanted Donnie to mention, here are some pictures of new things that have come on the market in recent years, which are all hormonal, correct? These are hormonal ways of neutering. No?
Yes, Donnie, correct.
Okay. Donnie?
Actually, yes. Okay, so actually, the first two pictures you had on the right, put that picture back. Okay. The bottom and on the right are not new. Those are old things, and those are hormones, right? The, people used to give either a type of a male, and I can go to the next slide. People would either give drops that you could put in your dog's tongue. In the list here, Megestrol acetate is a progesterone. Ovaban, and those you would give to your dog or your cat, and it would be, it's like what Ravi and I spoke about, giving a long-term progesterone, which we don't consider healthy. For example, the second one on the list, medroxyprogesterone acetate, is an injection. It's a long-acting release progesterone, and it prevents cycling. And it could be used in women, and in fact, it was used, there was a scandal here in Israel when they first brought the Ethiopian women, that they told them they needed vaccinations, and they injected them with Depo-Provera, and they stopped cycling so that they couldn't get pregnant. But those are not healthy. In other words, if you could use them in the short term, but in the long term, they'll probably cause mammary cancer and a uterine infection. Okay, and moving down the list, the third one on the list was a male hormone that was given to females, which kept them from coming into heat. The last two are actually new things and things that we use, and I think they're probably mutter and also not bad for the animal. The second to last one is called Supralorin. Supralorin is what's called a GnRH superagonist. And if you think about how the sex hormones work in the body, the testicles and the ovaries produce estrogen and progesterone, and they feed back to the pituitary gland, which produces hormones that stimulate them, LH and FSH. And that's stimulated by the hypothalamus that produces GnRH. GnRH is gonadotropin-releasing hormone. So these medicines, this one is called Supralorin. It's specifically made for animals, but there are at least three or four others in the family that are also used in people. And when you give it, it causes a boost of gonadotropin-releasing hormone. So if a female is close to ovulating, it'll bring her into heat and make her ovulate. It'll make the male act very male for 2 or 3 days. And then because it's so maybe 10,000 times as potent as the original hormone, it just shuts the whole system down. And that's a... it's a medicine that's given to people. Let's say a man who has prostate cancer that's responsive to testosterone, then usually the urologist will prefer to castrate the patient because he doesn't want him to have testosterone. And most of the patients are not willing to have that done. And so they give him an injection of this, and it drives the testosterone level down to zero. And the same thing if you give it to an animal. If it's a male, his testosterone will go to zero. He'll act as if it's completely neutered. Does not have any adverse health effect. And if it's female...
So why wouldn't you use these for females today to neuter the female dog rather than a surgical sterilization?
Ah, so the only reason you wouldn't is because it's expensive. In Israel, it costs about 650 shekels per injection, and it lasts between 6 months and a year. And so that would be very... So each injection costs about as much as a surgical sterilization, except you have to do it maybe 5 or 10 times the animal's life. However, in cats, it lasts anywhere from 1.5 to 3 years. And I would say, in my own personal practice, that's where I use it the most. There are many religious people who want the cat, but they don't want him acting male. And I give it to a male cat, and it will last 2 or 3 years. And it'll be neutered. When he starts acting male again, he gets another injection.
Okay, so I think that we're reaching the end here, and there are a lot of questions I just want to look at. There was also an interesting question in the Har Tzvi, the Chief Rabbi of Yerushalayim. A topic we didn't get to, which we'll have to another time, is what to do about strays. There are cities that do something called catch and spay and release. It doesn't seem to work. Some do surgical fixing. The question is how to deal with spays, a very interesting question. If anybody comes up with a really good way to deal with it, the Michelson Prize, I think, is still open. $75 million to find a non-surgical sterilization for cats and dogs. That will work. So challenge for anybody who wants to do that. It's well worth it. Just to the chats, I saw there were lots of chats. The beginning, some people were asking about male cats and female. What if you neuter? This Donnie will have to look at later. Let's see, felines are not the only mammals that spray. Canines, okay. Let's see. Does any of this have implications for people? Absolutely, chemical castration and sex offenders. Yeah, but well, like I said, we're not going to talk about humans, but all of this is very relevant in terms of humans. As I mentioned, we have Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas about prostate surgery. What about birth control pills? So we got to that. What about Tsar Bala Chaim when you cut off the rooster's comb? Good question. It seems that the Gemara allows it. Okay, then there was a lot of choppy here. What else? Let's see. They're not being killed actively with thrown in the field. Correct. I think Rav Malamed was advocating killing them in a merciful way rather than throwing them to the field. And yes, you'd rather be neutered if the baby and left to die in a rock of starvation. That could be. So he was not recommending that. Taking the babies from the families like Shaluch HaKen, we talked about that last week. Once decades ago, the idea was broached with birth control in cat food, but not done because up to a third of cat food, according to study time, was eaten by people. Interesting. Okay. I don't know about that. I think one of these is certain, correct. You have to make sure it's really non-Jews. That comes up with Mechira's comments as well. It happened here in Israel a few years ago. It turned out the non-Jew who they were selling the chametz to really had a Jewish maternal grandmother. Why no issur seiros for plants, flora? Plants are bred to, because I don't know. How would you do that to a plant? I'm not sure. Okay. I think that's it on the chats over here. And that's it. If there are any other questions. But the bottom line is there are halakha questions here. And if somebody has a pet, if they have a farm, in each case, they should ask their local Orthodox rabbi.
So. Okay. Hello. Thank you.
I think you just want to mention the last thing in your list is actually interesting. That there's a vaccination against the same hormone that we talked about in that last thing. That was the last thing in your list. And here in Israel, they bought an American vaccine at the Hebrew University to do an experiment with the street cats. Rather than trapping and neutering animals, where they trap them, you got to open the belly, take out their organs, it's a whole surgery. They have a vaccination against the gonadotropin-releasing hormone produced by the USDA. And A professor at the university did it. He did a study where they caught these animals, and all you do is catch them in a cage. You vaccinate them through the cage, you open the cage and release them, and then they're neutered, but not forever. They're neutered for about 5 years, which would be a lot easier and more humane way of controlling the street cat population. And if the USDA would make it commercially available, it would make it a humane, safe, and halachic way to neuter our pets as well.
Yeah, but then our previous Sara Chachlut, our Minister of Agriculture, tried to divert money to that, and he was told by the Bagatz he wasn't allowed. But that's a different issue. So if any other questions, otherwise...
Well, thank you. You know, I see you sound alike, you and your brother, because you sound alike. You look alike a little bit. The beard, his beard is not quite as gray. His beard is more black than yours. I'll put it that way. Slightly more black. So I assume he's a little bit younger, but you sound
just
the
a
same.
Little, yes.
Just a little. And you're also living in Israel, from what I gather, right?
Yerushalayim.
I'm sorry?
In Yerushalayim, yes.
Okay, nice to meet you. And thank you, Dr. Ari, even for someone who doesn't own pets. And, you know, these are very, you know, interesting discussion. And, of course, in Israel, a very, very practical one, even though you didn't get to all the, so everything, we have more to discuss in the future. And I want to thank you. I want, of course, those who haven't signed up yet for our Tanakh series, starting on Monday, 24 books in 8 weeks, Monday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 11 a.m., 24 speakers. I have a great series coming up. The next year will be My Shirts More Perkeva. We'll start the Parsha Shir again. I know we didn't have it last week and this week and next week, Ishiva Sarbatamuz. So I don't think we'll do it then, because that's around the time people will be eating, I hope, at least on the East Coast. So please God, that will start up in 2 weeks again. But my Perkeva Shir is continuing on Friday morning. And Monday, we will start our Tanakh. Mark Shapiro's classes continue through the summer. We'll probably have a few other courses going on. But our main thing for now in the summer will be the 24 Shirim on Tanakh. 11, we're making them 75 minutes, one book, that's even 75, an hour for presentation, 15 minutes for questions. So I want to thank you. Everybody should be well and be healthy and enjoy the weather, get a nice walk, and please God, we can travel to Israel someday soon. Israel
hopefully
and other
soon.
Places and people can travel, and even though the waves seem to be getting worse, hopefully it'll start coming down soon. Okay, everybody, be well. Have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.